There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 924, February 7th. 2022, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Haas is first. Stroll goes Saudi. The Clash was rocking the Coliseum. And we shall explain all gladly. Back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Logano wins at the LA Coliseum. Seb beats Seb at Race of Champions and LCH. Comes out of a deep slumber and says that he's back in town. And just a reminder, we need your contributions, tiny ones, little ones, medium ones, to keep this program up on the cloud. So just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nath, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Thank you. Making some motorsports plan. There is a lot of racing going on. We are not even in the third month of the month, and we just have a lot of action going on. So I am very happy. IndyCar season opener, St. Petersburg Grand Prix coming up here later this month. So I'm very happy. Then we have Sebring, and I am hoping to hear from some people in Zuropa. So I can get on a big old jetliner, make a run across the pond, which I haven't done since 2019. So I'm really itching to see some motorsports. You know, one of the things I want to do, Mr. Rogers, if all works out, if I can meet some racing people, then I'll at least would like to pay my pilgrimage to places like Montjuic Park in Barcelona or Dijon-Prenois in your Shangri-La, or maybe the Ferrari Museum in Maranello. We shall see. Opportunities are there, but we'll have to see how it works out with the COVID and time off from work and stuff like that. How are things on the lefty coast?
On the left coast, sir, we work all the time. That's all we think about. Work, work, work. F1Weekly.com and then more work, work. So there you have it, Nas. But boy, I'm telling you, that LA Coliseum was something else. I saw Formula One written all over it.
Did you watch the race?
I watched some of the race. That kind of racing is set up specifically for very small moments. You can't look at it. It's like looking at the sun. It'll burn your retinas.
Well, man, let me just tell you, I watched the race, and what they had done with the track in a short time was very, very impressive. And even more impressive is that they're going to tear down the track any day now. So just to do a one-time deal for a short race, what was interesting, this was very interesting. Kyle Busch, he set pole for heat one. I don't know how many heats they have now. But the track is a quarter mile track, as you probably saw that. And he lapped the track in, listen to this, 13.7 seconds. Okay, 13 seconds, less than 15 seconds. And speed was 65.478. Which reminds me of a long, long time ago when the Formula One circus first came to Long Beach in the early 70s, and Clay Regazzoni won the very first race. There was this gentleman. Did you ever read when you were young a Car and Driver magazine?
In the mornings and then in the evenings.
What was your impression of Car and Driver compared to Road and Track?
Amateurs.
Well, I always liked Road and Track much better. Car and Driver to me was like more like Smarty Pants. But there was a gentleman who used to work there. He was one of the editors or writers, Pat Bedard. And he raced also, and he once got involved in a tangle with Tom Sneva, and Tom Sneva was not very thrilled with him. But when the inaugural U.S. Grand Prix West took place, he wrote an article about the race, and he was making fun of, you know, the Grand Prix cars were going at the prodigious speed of 84 miles per hour and this and that, and what the average race speed was. I sure would like to hear his comments on lapping a track in 13 seconds and going at a ferocious speed of 65.4 miles per hour. But the clash was very impressive, the way it was put together. And I have to say this, Mr. Rogers, 150 laps on a quarter mile track. This is not kosher. Homie don't like it. But that's just, you know, a personal opinion. Joey Logano won. I believe he's still driving for Captain Roger Penske. So that it's, well, I will give credit to NASCAR for trying to shake things up and think outside the box. But, you know, over the years, what they have done, they have tried to align NASCAR with major Americana sports like baseball, you know, basketball, NFL. You know, the preseason testing, they changed the name to spring training. And then the, you know, last half of the season is the playoff. I think they should leave this term, keep the racing terminology, preseason testing, and leave this other analogy to, you know, games that historically have used these. But then again, it's just a personal opinion. And the big race, the biggest race, Daytona 500 is coming up. So that should be fun. And who would you like to see win the championship in NASCAR this year, sir?
Greg Biffle.
And he might be back. He might be back. Okay, sir, now, we normally don't start with NASCAR, but it's nice talking about it. But let's go back to what we are here for, Formula Uno. F1 girls are starting to show their legs. North Carolina-based Haas F1 has beaten the competition to unveil the 2022 Challenger, if that word can be used for Gunther Steiner's gung-ho operation. Car looks neat and clean. Time will tell if it is fast and mean. And apart from team owner's name and chauffeur-driven corporate sponsor logo, not much advertising on the car. In a way, it is surprising given Gene Haas's long-time involvement in NASCAR. You know, at one time his team was sponsored by Home Depot, and the fact that the team is based in North Carolina, which is now a major financial hub in the US of A. I would love to see Mr. Rogers, major household names like Coke, global household, not just here, Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Apple become primary sponsors in F1. That would be very, very good. And now that reports that there may be a race in Las Vegas, maybe these people will wake up and smell the Brazilian daiquiri. I am sure many racing fans will remember 7-Up on the beautiful 1991 Jordan, the car that started the Shumi Fizz in Formula One. Your thoughts on the Haas car, sir?
A lot of it was digitally faked, artificial, and I have no idea why they thought, wait a minute, they wanted to be first in something in 2022, and they achieved that.
Do you think this team will do like they did in their first season?
No. No, they'll be right there behind Fernando at the front. Yep, this is going to be a weird year, Nasser. And I'm telling you, there's going to be some weird stuff, weird food, weird people, weird thoughts. 2022 will be completely bizarro land.
Well, we're going to find out pretty soon who's got it and who does not. Okay, speaking of sponsorship, Mr. Rogers, we come to Lawrence Stroll as if he needs another million. His operation for My Boy Lollipop has landed sponsorship from Saudi Arabian National Oil Company, Aramco. Both have green as corporate colors, so the arrangement should flow well. And time will tell if it will become a gushing success like the other team sponsored by a Malaysian oil company and one of the cars driven by your hot favorite. See, I mentioned your favorite and Roscoe is agreeing with me. Aramco stands for Arabian American Oil Company, courtesy of Mr. John D. Rockefeller's Standard Oil Company, discovering the black gold in the desert when the natives were riding camels and not Cadillac Escalades, as they do now. And sir, here are some other dates, launch dates, in case our F1 Weekly familiar members are interested in logging on and checking out. Most of these things are done online these days anyway. So on February 9th, which may be after this is posted, we have Red Bull, Aston Martin on the 10th, McLaren on February 11th, Alfa Tauri on the 14th. The most magical name in the world of motor racing, Ferrari, they will unveil their car on 17th of this month. Mercedes, 18th, Alpine, featuring Fernando, on February 21st, Alfa Romeo, February 27th. And finally, Williams, once again late to the party, launch date to be confirmed. Let's hope they don't do another Paddy Lowe and be a no-show on first day of testing. And sir, speaking of all these launch dates for all the teams, are you expecting, apart from Fernando winning the World Championship, are you expecting any major changes in the Apple cart?
There could be major changes in the Apple cart. Very few teams get it right out of the box. I mean, it happens, but it hasn't happened since 2009. So I'm telling you, dude, there is going to be some fantastic and interesting concepts to look at. And when you pan out and you have the sandbagging, the competitiveness hidden deep down in the bowels, and of course you'll have El Machismo, it's going to be crazy, man. Crazy.
Well, if you think El Machismo will win the championship, what are the chances of his teammate becoming the first French world champion since Alain Prost?
Very good. Very good.
You think Esteban Ocon will dominate the two drivers? He'll be the alpha male?
No, he'll be the alpha male in 2023.
When Machismo is gone?
Exacto mundo.
Okay. Now, the Aston Martin situation, Lance Stroll over Sebastian Vettel. You think that will happen this year?
No way, Jose.
Okay. What did happen, which was quite a surprise, was Lando Norris getting the upper hand on Ricciardo. You think that trend will continue?
No, my friend Bob.
Well, you know, I have nothing against Lando, but it will be very bad for Ricciardo if Lando basically overpowers him again most of the season, because we all know how good Daniel Ricciardo is. So hopefully he will fight back and give Lando some dingo bites and win some races. I will not be surprised if McLaren wins a few races. I would expect Daniel to get another win or two. And the battle I'm really interested in, Mr. Roger, some of things are just not going to happen. We all know who the numero uno is at Red Bull and will be for quite a while. As far as the Mercedes thing is concerned, I've been thinking that if George Russell is going to take wins and a lot of points from Lewis Hamilton, taking into account that Lewis finishes behind him, that should also translate into him. If he can beat Lewis fair and square, then there will be moments he will beat, or he should beat Max fair and square. But like I said before, you know, pushing and shoving and shaming Bottas, That's a soft nut. When you're dealing with Max and Lewis, then we're talking serious Walnut Creek walnuts. What say you?
Well, it's all about how competitive Mercedes is going to be and the planets. And Mr. Lewis, Carl Hamilton, will explain about trajectories, time, the continuum? And will George have the impeccable timing of LCH? I mean, that in itself is a skill only achieved by very, very few people. So it's going to be fascinating. And what's good is the LCH Russell situation will steal the spotlight for a while, because now LCH is back, and it'll leave the other teams alone to do what they need to do, and that's spying, cheating, a lot of photographs, and my God, we need to catch up. So it's going to be great. I can't wait. Nasser, I am telling you, I'm on the edge of my seat.
That is good, sir. That is very good. And who's going to win the championship? We will find out in Abu Dhabi, but I'm very confident that the driver with the most wins, if it's not Lewis Hamilton, then there's only one other name, Max Verstappen. So Lewis will win a lot of races, and of course, so will Max. Who will win the championship? We'll have to figure it out. And, well, maybe Mazepin can spin on the last lap, you know, and create a Vince McMahon show. But we will see. Okay, sir, speaking of machismo, which we always do, not so machismo in Money Matters. Fernando Alonso's 2004 Renault chassis sold for less than expected at a recent auction. Hopes were as high as £385,000, which would be over $400,000, but the R24-07 brought in £217,000. I wonder what kind of bid they will get for his championship-winning car from 2005, the machine that shot down the Red Baron, and his 2007 Monaco and Monza-winning McLaren cars. Those were great wins, and of course at very historic locations. For me, his first win in Malaysia was also very impressive. I will never forget Machismo going into the lead, into the first corner, and being followed by his Steven Age Moonshadow. And that cat was quick right out of the bag. Sir, would you pay top dollars for 2005 Renault, in which Machismo won the race?
Indeed I would, but as you know, the finances of our humble organization will not take me to the finish line.
Yeah, you can get a Matchbox model, it's no problem. But I will say this, that, you know, time heals everything, and things, some things age with, you know, like wine. I have a feeling that, obviously, Michael Schumacher first car, Jordan, will be worth a lot of money in 10 years. So will be Ayrton Senna's 1984. Tolman, especially the one he raced at Monaco. And I think that Alonso's 2005 car in 10, 15 years is going to be worth a lot of money. Just what I see. Okay, sir. Lewis is back, and so is this hombre. Remember Sam Michael, McLaren's former sporting director, and he used to be at Williams also. You know, when Nico Rosberg joined Williams, Sam Michael gave him a written test. And Nico was, you know, well-educated guy, good upbringing and pedigree. Like, can you imagine asking Kimi Raikkonen or Michael Schumacher to take a written test? How do you think that will go?
Superbly.
Yeah, I think Kimi, you know, he won't say anything and just walk away. Michael Schumacher will probably bring in Willie Weber to sort out what's going on here. But anyway, Sam Michael has replaced Patrick Head as president of the FIA Safety Commission. The head of the FIA Safety Department, which works to improve the equipment used across all four wheel motorsport categories, as well as looking into and analyzing accidents in a bid to improve safety. So that is very interesting. Okay, sir, trouble in paradise. I'm not surprised this is happening. Sprint races could be axed from the 2022 World Championship calendar, as there is a standoff, surprise, surprise, over money between the, FIA and the big three teams. F1 was keen to double the number of sprint races from 3 to 6, and the first one was at Silverstone last year. But Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari they want to see the cost cap set this year at $140 million effectively increased to cover the additional races. Rich getting richer, this is not their first rodeo. So did you like the sprint races?
I thought it was okay, but Bottas liked them a lot as well.
Oh yeah, he was champion of sprint races. They had to try something new, and more racing is always better than less racing. But I think, you know, as a show, three or four is fine. We don't need a sprint race for every Grand Prix. Then it's just become too much. Moving on, sir, no Novaks in motorsports. Formula One has confirmed reports that all drivers and traveling team staff and other personnel in the F1 paddock must be vaccinated against COVID-19 for the entire season. Now, this is courtesy of Mr. Novak Djokovic's deportation from Australia. So the Australian Grand Prix officials have indicated there would be no exception to vaccination rules for F1 staff. So let's not have some people trying to be hero to the world and create a problem for everybody. Do you like this idea, sir?
Indeed.
Yeah, me too. There are times when one must adhere to officials just for the safety of everybody and not be selfish. Okay, sir, now we go to from the beginning. The karting track once owned by Michael Schumacher will be saved. Land in that area was bought by a German energy company, RWE, and they had this wonderful vision of mining some sort of coal in that area. But thanks to protests from environmental groups, they have stopped them from going devo. So that's very good. Now, this track, of course, is in his hometown, Kirpin, which is not too far from the Von Trips Museum in a place called Horem. And I was at this museum some years ago, Mr. Rogers, and seeing road signs saying Kirpin was a very chilling moment, or frisson, as you will call it. And by the way, this museum has one of the first go-karts that were ever built in California, and which Von Trips bought when he raced at Sebring 12 hours back in the day, back in the USSA. And now we come to trading headphones for driving gloves. And this is interesting. Mercedes chief strategist, James Bowles. This is the guy who says, Valtteri, this is James. He will compete in the Asian Le Mans series when the season gets underway in Dubai on February 12th. Bowles, who has played an instrumental role in Mercedes' championship success, will be driving for a team called Garage 59 in a McLaren 720S GT3. So what are the chances of, well, you know, Christian Horner used to be a racing driver and so was Dr. Marco. Would you like to see some of these other racing pit wall people get behind the seat of a race car in a competitive series?
Not really. It just doesn't tickle me. It doesn't impress me. I really don't care. And you know what? I'd rather hear about the Crochet series sponsored by Red Bull.
Oh, that's very impressive. And what network is that on?
That's from the Knitting Network.
The Knitting Network. Yes, we do need that network. Anything else, sir, you want to talk about? Are you ready for preseason testing?
Yes, because there'll be a lot of laughing. Yeah, I'm excited. So while I'm excited, I'm also very thirsty. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after this Perrier commercial.
Deep below the plains of southern France, in a mysterious process begun millions of years ago, nature herself adds life to the icy waters of a single spring, Perrier. Its natural sparkle is more delicate than any made by man, and therefore more quenching, more refreshing, and the mixer par excellence, naturally sparkling from the center of the earth, Perrier.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And you mentioned Race of Champions. won by Norway over USA, and the USA did a pretty good job, man, with Colton Herta and I believe Jimmy Johnson making it to the final. That was very impressive. I have not had a chance to watch any of the action, but I definitely plan to. That's why I love YouTube so much. Did you watch any of that, sir?
Absolutely. Jimmy was kicking ass. Colin was just opening up another can of whoop ass. They were trying, but just couldn't. They represented the USA with honor.
Yeah, that's good. And a competitive honor, which is very important. Okay, so now we go from Sweden to UAE and the ongoing every weekend series, UAE Formula 4 and also UAE Formula Regional, which used to be known as Formula 3. So in the Formula 4, Charlie Wirtz, Bambino of Alex Wirtz, he won one of the races and is now second in the championship. So good to see all these famous names keep on rolling for the sake of the family. The Formula Regional also in Dubai, there were three winners for the three races. This was interesting, Mr. Rogers. Sebastian Montoya, kid named Dino Beganovic, and Arthur Leclerc. Leclerc leads the championship. Mini Monty is third in the standings right now. Okay, before the start of the race, first race which was won by Sebastian Montoya, Juan's wife, Connie Montoya, was interviewed, and the lady asked her that, what's the difference between driving style of your husband and your son? And she herself said, well, my son is very calm and cool. And she goes, Montoya is very emotional and this and that, you know, which is so true. And so this is an interesting situation here. This kid, and I've been hearing this name since last year, you know, Dino Beganovic or Beganovic is not a very Swedish name. They are like Rolf and Olaf and Peterson. But he races as a Swedish driver, where he lives. And he is, 16 years old and in the Ferrari Driver Academy. And that's why I got to know him about a year or so ago. When he won that race, they mentioned that he lives in Sweden and his parents are from Bosnia. So the global expansion of motor racing is just beautiful. And as we said, you know, as long as you're competitive, it's appreciated. So we wish all these young kids all the best. And Sebastian Montoya, you know, because of the name, he lives in Florida and Miami. I've been following his career closely. And last year he did a pretty decent job. But this year, even though it's the UAE series, most of the drivers he's racing against, the scenery will be the same when he races in the main European racing series. But he's coming into his own. He's doing a very, very good job. Or as the host with the most would say, loss outstanding. So we'll keep an eye on these kids and see how it works out. Okay. Oh, sir, this is very interesting. If, you know, Michael Jordan owns a team in NASCAR now. As if one millionaire sportsman in NASCAR was not enough, now we have Floyd Mayweather Jr. His team is called the Money Team, and which is name of his clothing brand and his nickname. And so we will see how this thing works out. And his driver will be a guy named Kaz Grala. I've never heard of him, but he's from Boston. So we'll see how this thing, works out. Sir, shall we now open the goodie bag?
The bag is open, and you might as well just do it.
Okay, this conversation I had with Mr. David Land, and I met David a couple of years ago at Daytona, and he's one of those YouTubers where, you know, YouTube has become very big, and people are doing their own show, whatever they want to do. And I've been watching his show for a couple of years. He's putting his heart and soul, he's doing like the F1 Weekly version of IndyCar Weekly on his YouTube channel, but I think he is doing more than weekly, but really doing a very good job. He covers other series also, goes to a lot of races with a cameraman, and of course, very passionate about motor racing, like most of the F1 Weekly familiar. So he was kind enough to give me some time at Daytona. So please check out his David Land YouTube channel and enjoy the conversation. And David, thank you for your time, sir. Okay, folks, it's time to say hello to HelloFresh and David Land.
Hello. I do love HelloFresh. It's actually a good product, believe it or not. You know, I try not to promote things that I wouldn't use in everyday life, and actually the food's really good, so it's nice that they're paying me to say that, but also I would probably say it if they weren't paying me.
Okay, you are a YouTuber.
Yes.
And a racing junkie like we all are.
Yes.
Okay, so welcome to F1 Weekly. What's your story? You are from the racing capital of the world, right?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so let everybody know who David Land is.
Wow, that's a complicated question, and I hope the answer isn't too complicated. I'll try to give the short version. So I grew up not necessarily in a racing family, but my family always went to the Indianapolis 500. When the IRL happened, the split in 96, my dad actually got an opportunity to work with PDM Racing. Some people may know the name John Paul Jr. He was their driver. And so, you know, he did that for a couple of years. You know, he didn't really get very far in the racing, but obviously we had an interest as a family, so I was always watching racing. In fact, I could probably show you home movings where I'm just sitting staring at racing. So I always had an interest in it, but I didn't know how to get there. You know, I wasn't one of these people who, you know, got in a go-kart at 5 years old. That's just not the path that I was given in life. So I said, you know, I love this a lot. And everybody always seems to say, hey, you know, you really know your stuff here. You know, even when I was a young kid, you know, my cousins would remark how I could name the entire NASCAR field. And they couldn't believe that, like that I had that memory at that age. And so, you know, I went to I took some classes, broadcasting journalism. And I said to myself, you know, I actually ended up not only running out of money when I went to college for my first year, but I had to drop out of school. I lost my house. I had to live in an attic. So I said, oh my God, you know, I'm in real trouble here. So I said, well, what can I do? You know, there's two ways you get kind of in racing. There's three ways, really. You have money, you have a name, or you have connections. I had none of those things. And if you don't have any of those things, it takes a lot of time. And I'm an impatient man. So it was, what can I do with the skills that I have to get where I want to be? And so I had this YouTube channel, which was a hobby at the time, just something I uploaded, silly videos or videos that interested me, or, you know, just creative projects. And I said, wait a second, you know, I'm noticing that I'm watching YouTube a lot more, and it's becoming more and more of my entertainment, and there's people making genuine money doing this. And I said, well, what if I started really making motorsport content on YouTube? Could this work? And, you know, it just was really a wing and a prayer thing. There's no book. There's no class you can take to get to do what I do. So it's always a learning process. I'm still learning. I wouldn't say I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination at what I do. But, I'm definitely living the dream, though, that's for sure.
Okay, what was the first motor race you ever went to?
2002 Indy 500. Your viewer, your listeners may recognize that as the great controversy between Helio Castroneves and Paul Tracy at the end of the race, where there was a crash between Laurent Raydon and Buddy Lazier. Unfortunately, Buddy was my favorite driver growing up. But it seemed like Paul Tracy had made the pass for the win, and the officials decided differently. And Helio won his second Indianapolis 500. But, you know, it was one of those things where you'd seen your family go to that race for so many years, and you start begging and begging and begging every year to go, and you finally get to go, and it's just the most wonderful, wonderful experience. And I just remember the first time the cars came by, and it was so different from TV. You know, I'd seen single car runs before, I'd seen one car at a time qualifying, but when there's 33 cars all running in a line, you don't realize how the sound just all kind of, it's almost musical. It doesn't stop. Like on TV, the sound usually just follows one car, but when they're all in a line together, it's just a very different sensation and sound. It's hard to describe, but that was the first thing that kind of stood out to me as a racing fan in person.
I call it the symphony of performance. It's beautiful. And what is so amazing, you talk about cars going through hereditary cars. And obviously there's a battles going on, second and third, fifth and sixth. And when you follow, like when Simon Pagenaud and Alexander Rossi were trading places for the victory a couple of years ago, I was at that race. And I was in what would be just after the fourth turn. It is you have to see it to believe it. The cars coming down like fighter jets, and the way they go, it's incredible.
One of the things that I love to do, especially for the Indianapolis 500, is I love to bring someone who hasn't gone before, because in a lot of ways you almost get to experience that first race that you went to again through someone else's eyes. For example, this year I brought a friend of mine who I'd known since high school, and he'd always ask me, "Oh, David, do you ever have an extra ticket? Do you ever have an extra ticket?" I finally had an extra ticket for him in 2021. And we were hanging out the day before the race, and he's a big sports betting guy, and he was going to bet on Elio Castroneves. And he said, "How much should I bet on Elio Castroneves? I think I'm going to put $5 on him." Well, on my channel, I had picked him to win. So I said to my friend Eric, I say, "Put 10 on him." He's like, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yeah." And so ended up, toward the middle of the race, he's like, "Oh my God, Elio's running up front." Like, he was really getting into it because he had bet on the race. And then he started putting a prop bet on Elio in the middle of the race, and it turned out he won a pretty substantial amount of money. I think it was like over $500. But he was so into it, and it was so great to see that reaction. And it just reminds me, kind of, you know, with what I do, and how important it is for us in who are in racing to expose racing to other people, because in a lot of ways sometimes television doesn't do it justice. So when you can get someone to a racetrack, you may make a fan for life.
Yeah, I was at the race when Elio got his number four. It was very, very intense, as the Indy 500 closing laps are. I really think he has a very good chance of becoming the first five-time winner.
I do too. Well, you look at his team too. I think Meyer Shank Racing has really done a good job of building a winning organization. I mean, as we sit right now, they're running second in the Rolex 24, and that's a sports car race. So Simon Pagenaud will bring a tremendous amount of potency to that effort next year. And you look at Elio, able to win it last year, and Pagenaud finished third after starting, I think, 28th. So I think either of those drivers would be a good pick. But I think Elio, you know, you think about it, and so many drivers, you get cast off when they get older. And Elio really got kind of cast off by Roger Penske, in my opinion. And I really think he can still do it. And I think he will prove, I think he'll prove to the world that he's still a very capable race car driver this year in IndyCar. And certainly, I think number five, history making, it's very much in the cards.
Did you ever go to the U.S. Grand Prix at Indianapolis?
Okay, so that's my greatest life regret. I lived at the time when that race was happening in a town called Franklin, Indiana, which was about 40 miles away from Indianapolis. And I kick myself so much that I did not go, especially because it was the V10 era. It's the highest revving engines we'll probably ever see, the best sounding engines we'll probably ever hear, some of the fastest cars ever in Formula One. And I didn't get to see him, and I could have very easily. But, you know, I was a young kid. It wasn't like I was 20 and I just said, "Oh, I'm not going." It was, but at the same time, yeah, I very much regret that I did not go see that Formula One race when it was there. And certainly I want to get to a Formula One. I haven't been to a Formula One race yet. I really want to. Obviously, there are two chances now in this country. There's Miami and COTA and potentially Las Vegas coming up. So there are lots of opportunities to do that. And I certainly have that on my recent bucket list to get to a Formula One race.
Yeah, and there's one north of the border also in Montreal want to fill that desire. I'm going to tell you the most impressive thing of the U.S. Grand Prix at Indianapolis, and it was pretty obvious in qualifying and practice. And these cars were going down a straight, heading toward first turn, and they would turn. Even after a few seconds the car had turned, you would still hear the sound echoing through the grandstand. I mean, that was like, wow, very, very... Have you ever been to Circuit of the Americas or anything?
I have not. That's another one.
It is one of the best tracks you can go to, and I highly recommend that you come to the U.S. Grand Prix in Tejas. They have very good steak and baked potatoes and the best onion rings.
Well, certainly as a corn-fed American boy, I do love my steak and my baked potatoes, that's for sure.
Yes. Okay, now, talking of Formula One, what do you make of, you know, you talked about that Paul Tracy and Castro Neves race. I was watching that, and I know Paul Tracy is still fuming about it, and so is Kim Green or Barry Green.
For sure.
What do you think about what happened in Abu Dhabi last year?
It's way too far on the entertainment side, in my opinion. It was obvious that, in some ways, it was very much manipulated. I think Lewis did a great job to put himself in a position to win the world championship. I still believe that Verstappen was the deserving champion if you look at the whole season.
Absolutely.
But Lewis did exactly what he needed to do to win that race. And unfortunately, the stewards decided that one. They should have, and they didn't even really necessarily follow their own rule book. So I think it was, and you look at those last two races, it wasn't just the last race, it was the last two races. In a lot of ways, you look at the rest of the season, Spa is a great example of just officiating that just was completely amiss the mark, in my opinion. And that's something Formula One needs to really work on. If they're going to, because if you look at, you think about Indianapolis, and the USGP in Indianapolis, you set back Formula One 10 years in this country. And you've got to be really careful, because American fans don't forget. We have very long memories in this country. So if for some reason some sort of another controversy like that happens here in this country, or really just, you know, the statistic of distrust in the process, in the sport itself, continues, you know, people, I think, will turn it off in this country, because I would say in America, we're not really fans of fakery, believe it or not, at least in sport.
You sure now?
Well, we do. We like professional wrestling, but we know it's fake, you see.
I think the most common word in the society today is fake.
Well, that's true.
We hear it all the time. But
do people actually like it, though? That's the thing. Do people enjoy it, or do people just kind of have to live in the squalor that they've created for themselves?
You know what the origin of fake is? And I heard this myself at Long Beach Grand Prix many years ago. Fake boobs.
Well, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Talk about too much entertainment. Okay, now.
Well, we can say that the F1 season finale was fake boobs. It looked nice on TV, but let's be honest, it wasn't very pleasurable.
Yes, yeah, exactly my point. Okay, now, talking about, it's good to see a lot of young American talent in IndyCar racing, okay? Obviously, Colton Herta is very well established. Patricio Ward, he's from south of the border, but I think he can be claimed as...
We call him North American.
Yeah,
North American.
Exactly, there you go. And he's very good talent. What do you make of this kid, who I think is very good, Kyle Kirkwood?
Oh, he's going to light the world on fire, I think. He's got the right attitude. He's quick. He's won a championship in, I think, almost every car he's ever set foot in, which is really, really, really spectacular. I think, unfortunately, from an American F1 perspective, I don't think he's going to quite get there unless something dramatic happens this year. But I do think that he is going to be on every team's radar after this year, because I don't know for sure, but I have a very strong suspicion that this AJ Foyt deal that he has currently, he's going to run the full season for AJ, is probably only a one-year deal. And so you look at next year, Andretti will likely have a seat open. Penske will likely have a seat open. Ganassi possibly will have a seat open. I think they will all be trying to get their hands on Kyle Kirkwood, especially, you know, if he's impresses in a Foyt car, in which you look at some of the talent that they've had there, like Sebastian Bourdais. He's no slouch, four-time series champion over in Champ Car, and really couldn't do all that much in Foyt. Let's say Kyle Kirkwood wins one race, two races, or just is a consistent, you know, fast six podium top 10 guy. Man, his stock is going to rise very, very quickly if it isn't already well into the stratosphere.
You think he'll be able to stand the heat from his teammate, Tatiana Calderon?
You're going to get me in trouble. you know,
for F1 Weekly, we have one rule. We don't belong to the Mother Teresa School of Compassion and Peaciness. So say whatever you want.
I'll say this. Richard Petty gave a great quote one time, which is, racing needs, to be good racing, you need fast cars, you need medium car, fast cars, and you need slow cars. It's good to have slow cars in the race. So, you know, a little bit of lap traffic never hurt anybody. And you know what? I wish her all the best. You don't want anybody to not succeed, right? And what, you know, you never know. Carlos Fuertes has an IndyCar race win. With strategy, with weather, with any kind of craziness in racing, anyone can win a race. That's why you run the race. If you know the result beforehand, you will never... What's the point of even putting the cars out on track and spending the money on fuel and tires?
Okay, you're very passionate about IndyCar racing. I want to ask you this thing. What has happened to willpower? There is no will and there is no power now. I'm surprised he's still with Penske.
Well, he got a contract extension, and I think it's probably his last contract extension. You know, will is just, you know, it's amazing. You know, it's just, we sometimes think of willpower as one of the next generation, but you realize that, you know, his first start was in 2005. He's really of the generation that's on its way out in some ways. Now, I'm not saying he couldn't have a career resurgence like Elio is having right now if, for say, another team picked him up. But, you know, I think the big thing with Penske is, you know, Penske is a very demanding team. And I think in a lot of ways, they operate in some ways like Formula One operation, where whoever the top driver is, whoever they consider to be the top driver, gets the best stuff, gets the priorities strategy. So then that would be Joseph Newgarden right now. And so, you know, there was a point where willpower was that guy. He's no longer that guy. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Penske does keep him, he'll probably be in the sports car, the Porsche, whether that's an IMSA or a WEC. And if he stays in IndyCar, I don't think he'll be with Penske anymore. I'm not saying that I don't think there's a way that willpower could kind of have a career resurgence. And certainly, you know, he won a race last year, so he's not completely... not completely useless, but yeah, it certainly seems like he's kind of on the other side of the mountain.
Now, speaking of Penske, I think Roger buying the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was the best thing to happen to the Brickyard since 1911. Mm-hmm. Where do you see him taking the sport in the next 5 years?
It's tough to say, because I think, you know, one of the things that I think everybody's a little bit concerned about, and it was one of the first questions everybody had, was the line of succession. You know, let's be honest here. Roger Penske is an 85-year-old man. You know, so many things can happen, especially in modern times, in the times of COVID. You know, we see people pass away very quickly. So I'm a little bit concerned about that, because I'm someone who's not got a very strong a business background. So I don't really know how to gauge Penske's second, third, fourth in command, because I think those are the people who are really going to shape the sport. If this was 10, 15 years ago and Roger took it over, I would be a lot more positive. And I'm not saying I'm negative, because I think Roger, one of the things that to me Roger has done so, so well, because it makes sense. He's a team owner. So what he's been able to do, the confidence he's been able to give the team owners, the entries that we've seen, capacity, we're going to have capacity grids at most races next year. 5 years down the line, what I would like to see from Roger is I would like to see more stability. I would like to see more opportunities for sponsors. I would really like to see them expand their social media presence. That's the big part that I think, that's the big missing link right now with IndyCar. And partially, I think it's why I've been able to kind of carve out the niche I have been able to, because there's so much IndyCar could be doing in new media, and they aren't. So what I would like to see is just a much stronger push for a younger demographic, because that's what IndyCar really needs. It needs to replace the fans that are not only now, you know, you lost a bunch of fans in split, but now you're losing the fans that you do have to old age. So you have to replace those fans. And how you get there, I'm not sure. But I think one of the ways you can do that is through social media engagement, because that is the way the world works now.
As you know, I watch your David Land YouTube channel on a regular basis, and I've been doing this for a couple of years, and I appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Tell us about what your plans are for the next 3 to 5 years, and how many subscribers you have. Basically, we're giving you a free plug.
I love free plugs.
Yeah, and we expect a check in the mail, but that's okay.
We'll send you some HelloFresh. I get that food all the time. But so I have a YouTube channel where I talk motorsports. Primarily, a lot of people, like you say, know me for IndyCar. But we're currently doing an interview at the Rolex 24. I cover sports car, NASCAR, Formula One, whatever I. What's great about what I do is that I have freedom to do kind of what I want. So if something interests me, I cover it. I have 70,000 subscribers and growing. The next 5 or 10 years, I'd really just like to keep expanding this. I have some pie-in-the-sky ambitions throughout racing that I'd like to accomplish. I might actually even like to try some driving at some point, just from a... just kind of a personal ego standpoint. I'd love to drive, but... The other thing I think from that is if you can drive a little bit, you have a greater understanding of how the people you are interviewing think, and you can speak the language a little bit better. And so that's something that's been really exciting for me, in especially the last couple of years, is meeting people in the sport and establishing relationships with people, you know, like Pato Award or Colton Herta. I mean, these are some of the top prospects in the world. And, you know, we're on a first-name basis. So that's one of those things that I would like to do, is just continue to establish my credibility, not only in the IndyCar paddock, but here in NASCAR, and be someone that people can rely on to be a voice in racing, and hopefully help expand this sport. You know, to me, I come into this and I see some of the issues, and you know, I can't solve everything, and I don't claim that I can solve anything, but I would like to try to give racing a platform where it can be seen in its best light, and at times when it needs a kick in the pants, I want to give it a kick in the pants, but I want to do it in an entertaining fashion, and I want to hopefully make lifelong fans in this sport and continue. You know, I would like to continue to do this for the rest of my life if possible, stay in the sport and help it grow.
Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? We have a global audience, so if you want to say anything to them, there you go.
Wow, so yeah, I would say, if you're a little bit disillusioned with Formula One, check out IndyCar and watch my stuff. I'm not saying it will replace Formula One, but because I watch Formula One. There's things that in all racing series that are good. And, you know, don't just stick with one series, I would say. I think the more racing you watch, watch rally cars, watch dirt. We have a thing called sprint cars here. Watch that. If you're in Europe, that it's a totally different motorsport than perhaps anyone is used to. But just don't be afraid to watch other forms of racing, because I guarantee you you'll enjoy it, and you may find a new passion. So that would be what I would say to the global audience, is expand your horizons and enjoy the sport, because it's the greatest sport in the world as far as I'm concerned, and it's amazing because you think about it, and you mentioned global audience, it brings people together. I mean, you look around this room even that we're sitting in, there's so many different people from different backgrounds, and it's fantastic, and we're all here because we love this sport, and in a time where things are so divided, it's great to have something that we can all bring, that come together and enjoy. So I think that's my message, is let's all enjoy motorsport and not focus on the bad things.
Absolutely, and you know, so true what you just said, how it brings together. I was talking to a Formula 3 driver some years ago. He was from Lebanon, Basil Chaban, and he said the exact same thing, that you know, it brings people from all parts of the world for one common passion, one common goal, winning. So thank you so much, and we'll be in touch.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
David, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. First cut is the deepest, and this is part 2. Some interesting season openers from days gone by. And we shall start with a very, very shocking sort of a thing that Ross Brawn and JB did with Brawn Racing. In 1977, Walter Wolf, a multi-billionaire Canadian oil man of Austrian heritage, he started a team. He was partners previously with Frank Williams. So he started a team and hired this very talented English designer, Harvey Postlewhite, Dr. Harvey Postlewhite. They designed a car, very simple and very beautiful. And it was a beautiful gold color on that car, black and gold, if I remember. And Jerry Scheckter won the season opener and shocked the hell out of everyone. And the season opener was in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Sadly missing from the Grand Prix circus these days. 1982 Long Beach Grand Prix, pole position for, believe it or not, Andrea De Cesaris in his Alfa Romeo. And then he spun out under pressure from, I believe, Niki Lauda, who went on to win the race, and that was his first victory after coming back from retirement. And Niki was driving for Ron Dennis. 1983, Nelson Piquet Sr. becomes third Brazilian to win home Grand Prix, driving a Brabham BMW. 1989, R. Nige does a Mario and wins for Enzo, first time out in a red car. This was first victory for John Bernard's new gimmick, semi-automatic gearbox. Race took place in Rio de Janeiro. 1991, Phoenix AZ, home of the dry heat. Ayrton Senna da Silva sizzles in the heat of Arizona, winning from pole position. At one time, he was like 46 second over Le Professeur in his Ferrari. And sir, I was there and it was beautiful. The heat was too much. You could hardly see, I was there on practice and qualifying, you could hardly see anybody in the team garages, so hot. But the interesting thing was, which Bob Varsha used to bring up a lot, that there were less spectators at the US Grand Prix than there were at the ostrich races in Phoenix. Apparently, they have, you know, like in California, they have a big garlic festival. Apparently, in Phoenix, they have a big ostrich festival. And I just wonder if Bernie buried his head in the sand on hearing this great Nielsen rating that his love show was up by ostriches. But these things happen. 1994, Brazil, Michael Schumacher wins in his Benetton and would go on to win the next three races, also on his way to the first of his seven championships. Sir, I want to ask you a question. Michael Schumacher, seven championships. How many were lucky championships?
About six.
Okay, so which one was well-deserved? The first one?
Yep, always.
Okay, that's good. Okay, 1996, this is something I'll never forget. JV, Jacques Villeneuve on pole in Albert Park, and Damon Hill was at the top of the podium at the end of the race, and JV finished second. But sir, I was living in San Diego at that time, and I was moving around in my casa when I heard that Jacques Villeneuve will start his first Grand Prix from pole position, and I was freeze frame for a minute or two. Hit me very hard, because that kind of stuff is very hard to do. So there you have it. Okay, 1999, same place, same cafe, Albert Park. Red Ferrari takes the checkered flag first, season opener. But wait, we have a surprise winner. It's not the Red Baron at the wheel. It's the Baron of Good Times, the Dublin Dynamo, Mr. Eddie Irvine. For me, Eddie will remain the most honest driver. Once Peter Windsor asked him, what will it take for him to beat Michael Schumacher when they were teammates? And his instant response, without even thinking for a second, was, Michael has to stop going so bloody fast. And that is so true. It was not going to be easy to beat Michael Schumacher. So there you have it, sir. Albert Park is not the season opener this year, but I will be very, very happy if that race takes place. And also, I'm hoping very much that the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal takes place. And, you know, if Canadian takes place, Mr. Roger, I will do my best to do Canada, Miami, Austin, and Mexico at least. So that'll give me 4 races in a season, and I'll be the happiest crazy cat from Karachi ever.
Well, that sounds good, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Another 0 added to the paycheck for the 2022 year of inflation. And I hope that helps you out, Nasser.
Oh, yes. Those zeros will bounce the inflation back to, I don't know, Wuhan or someplace like that.
Well, usually it's a giant sucking sound.
Oh, yeah, from Mexico. Okay, Clark Perot.
Thank you, Nasser. And there you have it, Nass. Another week or two, and we'll be in deep, deep Fernando heaven. So, once again, I want to thank everybody who's listening to the show. Thank you, and good night.
Thank you, and bye-bye.